Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
About you got to put it in perspective.
Hey, yo, check this out, man. We got to get serious. We got to do a radio version for this.
Word, I mean, we got to take all the cussing, right?
All the cussing.
Yellow boy kicking the beat.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy.
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
A lot of people say zoology is bull. I disagree. And think about other classes like math, where you got to deal with imaginary numbers. They're not real, bro. They're imaginary. That's pointless. It's irrelevant to my life. But zoology is different. Like, for instance, did you know dolphins weren't fish? Dolphins are mammals, bro. That's crazy. Like, they're just like us. They just swim. And they have, like, smoother skin.
You know, sometimes I think you're normal, then you say stuff like that, and I remember, oh, wait, no, he's freaking nuts.
What is happening here?
I don't know.
And now.
So when I was in eighth grade, I thought they were so good and they were so cool.
Yeah, back in middle school, I kind of liked them.
But now I realize they're awful.
Our feature presentation.
Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It's Tuesday morning, the 18th of September.
That's a painful review to hear from the kids, isn't it?
Happens. Can't get everybody.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Should be the slogan of this program. Hey, y'all.
Hey, Bean.
What's happening?
I don't want to spoil the extensive Emmys coverage that we have later on, because I know we have a guest in, we have audio. Ali's going to be talking about what's happening coming up, because the Emmys were last night. I did not watch it. It's the first time I think maybe I haven't watched the Emmys in 25 years.
You're the luckiest person in 25 years.
My beloved but terrible Seahawks were on Monday Night Football, so that's what I was doing. But Ali and I were texting back and forth all night, so she was keeping me abreast of what was going on the show.
Yeah, and he'd be like, 5 sacks, and I'm like, what?
Yeah. Yes, it was an awful game, but unless you're a Bears fan. But I did want to talk about the proposal from the stage, because just to get into the, again, not to spoil the coverage
so
later.
So the only interesting part of the show?
The only interesting part.
That just part? Into the discussion that we've had in the past about, is that an appropriate hijacking of everyone else's time to make it a, hey, look at me moment? And we say this when we see public proposals at Dodgers games. We say this, in lots of cases where somebody takes something that's not about them and makes it about them. Are we cool with it? Are we applauding this guy for using that time on the stage that's supposed to be honoring television to propose to his girlfriend?
If the show wasn't as bad as it was,
That
would have been so annoying.
It saved
absolutely
a death show.
Absolutely.
It was the only thing that mattered.
Agreed.
Really?
Yeah, yes. It's just the opposite of what I normally think, which is 100%. The same thing you're saying, which is don't make everything about you. In this case,
right.
It needed to be about somebody, for God's sakes.
Amen.
And so God bless him for standing up there and doing that. I was like, wow, that's a real moment in this show.
I just feel like it's a big waste of the viewers' time.
Oh, please, that was the rest of the show.
Oh, all right. Well, part of the reason I bring that story up is because there's another story this week about a Chinese flight attendant. On May 19th, her boyfriend, apparently he works for the airline too, but judging from the pictures, he was not in uniform, so it was probably a deadhead flight for him or something. Expression?
I don't
know. Yeah. So he's a passenger on the flight. But at some point, he gets up and walks up with flowers and a ring and proposes to his girlfriend, who is the flight attendant on the flight. And everybody oohs and ahs. There's a video of them kissing, and then the bride-to-be gets on the speaker and says, I never expected my boyfriend would propose to me during a flight. Thank you to everyone for witnessing the event. It was about 30 minutes into the flight. All the passengers were into it. However, when she landed, she was fired by the airline.
Wow.
Oh.
They said it was inappropriate and out of protocol, and that it jeopardized she did not consider the safety of the passengers on the flight. I mean, it's not like the flight was in a spiral.
Yeah, what's going to happen?
To the ocean. I mean, I guess the only thing you could argue is that maybe somebody was waiting for a drink and they, you know, they had to wait 10 minutes because she was busy getting engaged. But this is a case where somebody, it wasn't all about her, according to her employer, and they ended up firing her for being proposed to. Now, what do you think about that?
The only thing I could think is if she took a ton of time away from her duties, but what if some random guy decided to propose to her and do all this stuff, and she was like, huh, that's funny, that's weird, and it would take the same amount of time. You know what I'm saying?
No. No.
Like if some person that she didn't even know, like, decided, oh, I'm going to propose to this woman on my flight that I dig, who's my flight attendant.
Okay.
They wouldn't fire her for that.
Right, but so, one is her choice, one isn't, I think.
She was surprised by it.
She was surprised by it, but I guess they're saying, I mean, it wasn't really her fault. She didn't initiate it.
That's what I'm saying.
How bad does her fiancé feel now that he got his girlfriend fired?
Exactly.
He's got to feel bad.
He's got to break it off.
I don't know. I think unemployed and alone. I think if you took a vote of the people on that plane, they would say it was a sweet moment and they're glad they got to see it.
Yeah.
I guess so.
But I guess when you're working for a company, they have the right to say how you spend your time when you're on the clock being paid by them, I guess. So
what airline is this?
This is
Alaska, you said?
No, it's a Chinese. Chinese airline. Yeah.
Huh.
Well, I'm not going to use them for my flights to China.
China Eastern Airlines. Coming up, it's called.
Yep, at least four.
China Eastern. Yeah. So anyway, the takeaway here then is proposal on the Emmys, thumbs up. Mm-hmm. Proposal on the plane, also thumbs up, right?
Yes, agreed.
I love. I don't. I hate these things. I think it's crap having to watch them, and I loved it last night.
Same.
So weird.
Hated it as a policy.
Yeah.
Last night, that show needed it more than anything in the world. And there was something about last night's proposal that sort of he was talking about his dead mother.
Yeah, it was sweet and sad. And
sort of super well done and sort of not about him.
No.
Kind of. Yeah, it was a strange moment.
Yeah.
Should you be able to win an Emmy for producing the Oscars?
That's another great question.
Or directing the Oscars or whatever it was.
That's another great question. I don't know.
Because it does seem like it's a loop now.
Yeah, it is. It's incestuous. Award shows giving awards to other award shows.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
All right, let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean show, shall we?
I'm right here. And I don't care that you're uncircumcised.
All right. Going to have to change that. Michael Schneider is going to be here in studio talking about the Emmys.
He sure takes the worst press room photos, doesn't he?
I have not noticed that, no.
Did you see, Allie, he was tweeting all the backstage photos as they win, they come backstage for interviews and whatnot, and all of them are from like 80 feet away and blurry.
Oh, Michael.
Maybe he needs to get his own guy?
I'm just trying to figure out what the point of it is.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
we'll have to ask him about that.
Okay.
Comedian Christopher Titus joins us today on the program. Very excited about that. We have Jensen Karp, our Kevin and Bean beef correspondent, telling us about Eminem and Machine Gun Kelly.
Sure.
Okay.
What's happening there?
Whose side are we on for this one, by the way?
I would say Eminem.
I don't know yet. Maybe Eminem.
Yeah, Eminem had a much better diss track. And I'm going to blow your minds with a tidbit coming up.
Okay.
All right. What? Kill shot.
Okay. again, we'll have the Emmy highlights, and we've got Mama Mugs. Talking Dodgers baseball.
Oh, no.
Is she sad about the first place Dodgers 2 weeks before the end of the regular season?
Of course. Why else would we talk to her?
Okay.
Should we? Oh, she's going to jinx them.
She's jinxing nothing. She's not even a fan. She doesn't even watch the games.
Okay. She didn't jinx them last year. They got to game 7 of the World Series.
How'd that wind up?
Well, not great.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back with what's happening next.
Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
K-Rock. It is Tuesday. Allie is here with our first look at what's happening.
When I started watching the Emmys, I thought, okay, it's going quick. They're keeping it moving. I mean, not during the opening song or the monologue. That was just death.
Okay.
But once they got to the actual awards, because they didn't introduce each, you know, and up for outstanding drama, Game of Thrones, play a clip. Handmaid's Tale, play a clip. They literally played clip, 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 clip no talking in between, and then brought out a presenter who then got right to it.
That was weird in that they would say who the nominees were, and then they would bring out the celebrities to give the answer.
Right.
Versus go the opposite way. And usually they can talk and the stupid patter and they try to be funny. And
I think it saved a lot of time and kept it going a bit quicker. I thought that for the first hour.
Mm.
And then I looked at the clock and I'm like, whoa, all right. It just kept hitting speed bump after speed bump after speed bump. Oh, those sketches in between My Rudolph and...
Oh, dear Lord.
Sweet baby Jesus. What were you doing? But...
They're usually pretty funny, by the way, those two.
Amazingly funny.
They usually are.
Yes, it was death.
The only thing I care about is how was my sweet Betty White?
I hate to tell you this, Bean, but you know how she's always been super old, but really sharp,
sharp
and on top of it?
Quick. Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Not so much anymore.
Yeah. Really?
It's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, it made me really sad.
For the first time, at least to me, and I haven't watched her in a while, but to me, for the first time, it was like, oh, no, she's old.
Yeah.
Well, she's 96.
I understand
she's
96, that.
But the whole I never thing thought of, that.
Yeah, the whole thing about her is she doesn't act like she's 96.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, that makes me sad.
Yeah, it was kind of sad.
Oh, she's so
she's
precious.
She's very
though.
Sweet, but yeah.
Just so precious.
She's been in show business for almost 80 years, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was nervous when I saw her trending, I'll tell you that, because I didn't know she was going to be on the Emmys. So I thought the worst.
Yeah, she came out to a standing ovation, obviously, but she's just, she's incredible.
Hold on, I just go back to what Bean just said. So you saw something trending and you thought the worst? Really?
Well, in my defense,
wow, that's so weird for you.
She's 96. That's a reasonable. That's a reasonable assumption at that point.
You assume if 24-year-olds are trending, they're dead.
Okay, fair point.
Oh goodness! All right, you want to hear about some winners?
Sure.
Here's the thing. Game of Thrones led the pack with 22 nominations after missing the eligibility window last year. Remember when everyone's like, "Why isn't Game of Thrones winning?"
That's right. All right,
because they were too late. Like, I guess they didn't have it circled on their calendar by the time they had to send stuff
in. I don't know, but this year it felt like a season hasn't been on in 10 years,
right?
Absolutely. Yes. Well, it didn't stop them from winning Outstanding Drama Series. That went to Game of Thrones. Outstanding Comedy Series. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. That's Bean's show. Bean loves it.
I do love it. And I think you've seen it, right, Alan?
I have.
You should love it, too. It's your Gilmore Girls creator
show.
It's
adorable. I really like it. But you were up against Atlanta and Barry. And you're crazy.
Look, I'm not an Emmy voter.
Right.
But given those choices, I would have voted for Barry for Comedy of the Year. I really would have.
And I think Barry is so new that it's gonna win some stuff down the road. But I really feel like this was Atlanta's year to win some, even though they've won in the past. But it was their year. I really thought Brian Tyree Henry was going to win Best Supporting Actor. However, I was not upset when Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Comedy Series went to Henry Winkler.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Oh, he is such a love bug.
First ever Emmy, too, for a guy who's been in television for almost 50 years.
That's insanity.
Yeah.
That is.
He's amazing.
And he's been great for all those years.
Absolutely.
Sure he I mean, Arrested Development alone, he should have won an Emmy.
Agreed.
Children's Hospital alone, he should have won an Emmy. Right?
Happy Days alone, the Fonz. Hey. All right, that's weird. Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series, Alex Borstein. Who I was happy to see her win because she is so damn funny, and I think she had one of the best speeches of the night. Outstanding Supporting Actor.
She did start with, I decided to go braless tonight.
Sure did. Sure did.
Quite a choice.
Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Drama Series, Peter Dinklage for Game of Thrones, and Actress in a Drama Series, Supporting Actress, Thandie Newton from Westworld. Oh. Yeah, some interesting choices. Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series, again, Bean Show, The Crown, Claire Foy.
Look. I know that was a stacked category, and you weren't going to make everybody happy with whoever won in that category.
But when you pick The Crown, you lose
but
everyone.
She was phenomenal in The Crown, and it's a great show. But
better than Elizabeth Moss, The Handmaid's Tale?
That would have been my vote. Elizabeth Moss did some of the best work I've ever seen on television in this past season of The Handmaid's Tale. That would have been my vote. But again,
and
not
I would have picked Sandra Oh for Killing Eve.
Same. Not a bad choice either.
Just saying.
Look, there's a lot of competition, and only one can win.
So boring.
Believe me, there were plenty of people happy about Claire,
so boring.
Too. But don't hold that against sweet Claire.
It's so boring.
Kevin, you're going to become a big Claire Foy fan.
Am I?
When the girl with the dragon tattoo comes out. The new movie. You know, she's the new Elizabeth.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. Yeah, I love that first one.
Terrific actress.
Outstanding lead actor in a drama series. I think this was a surprise, don't you think? It was Matthew Rhys for The Americans.
That show was definitely under-awarded through its long run.
Agreed.
Right.
It was a great show, and he's tremendous on it.
Do you think this is the, hey, this is the last time we're going to get a chance to vote for this guy for the show?
I think that probably plays into it, yeah.
Absolutely. And Claire Foy, too, right? Because she's now gone.
Right.
They bring in an older queen.
Sure. Olivia Colman, right?
Olivia Colman?
Yeah.
Oh, damn it. Now I'm going to have to watch The Crown. I totally forgot it was her.
You're back in.
Dang it. Oh, outstanding limited series. I know a lot of people loved it. The Assassination of Gianni Versace won for that American Crime Story. So, I mean, I guess they didn't watch Patrick Melrose, but that's cool. That's fine. Whatever you want to do. I understand. I was let down a lot last night.
Yeah.
Really let down a lot.
You're pretty invested in other people's prizes.
I really am. I really am. Really happy for the winners. I would have been really happy if there were other winners.
They were different.
Yeah. That's just me. Hey, let's talk about some birthdays, shall we? Actor Jason Sudeikis. Love him. Brazilian soccer player Ronaldo. Do you like him? Is that one of the ones?
No, he's a good one.
Okay, he's not the one with the crazy...
He's not the Portuguese one, though.
Yeah. What's with those eyebrows?
I don't know.
He's shut. I mean.
I do love, though, that he just transferred from Real Madrid to Juventus in Italy.
Okay.
And went, I think, 4 games without scoring a goal.
And that's not like him at all.
No. Oh. They paid a lot of money to get him.
Whoops.
I think he finally scored one.
Oh, good. Actress Aisha Tyler. Actor James Marsden. Model, and I believe an actor, Patrick Schwarzenegger and Jada Pinkett Smith. And that's what's happening.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show. K-Rock.
Kevin, I know you've been a huge Eminem fan.
Yes.
Since The Real Slim Shady. Did you ever think we'd get to the point where he would be the cranky old get-off-my-lawn guy?
No, I did not.
That's all he does now is spend time yelling at the kids. And if there's one person who can break it down for us, it's our friend Jensen Karp, who's on the line. Hit it, Steve.
Jensen Karp, your flow is so tight. You rock the mic right. I can't believe you're right. Jensen Karp, come on, blow up the spot. The world-famous K-Rock, let's talk hip-hop.
Jensen is our hip-hop correspondent and also the head of the beef division. And I think it's time to talk about what's going on with Eminem. Why has he been in so many fights with so many people throughout the years? Innocent people like Christina Aguilera somehow get in his sights. People like Everlast. People like Ja Rule. He's always battling with someone. Why, Jensen?
Well, it's usually people who necessarily can't defend themselves to the degree in which he can rap. He never goes against people that are as good as he is, and we're sort of seeing it this time because this has more white people infighting than, like, a Whole Foods parking lot. he always reaches for the Kardashians. He was still rapping about Christopher Reeves when he was dead. I mean, these are all sort of very easy targets for him, and he's been doing it for years.
Now, I don't know. I'm going to confess here and tell you that I am not super familiar with Machine Gun Kelly. Is he a big name in the rap world?
No, I wouldn't say he's a big name, but what he's done over the past 6 to 8 years is sort of develop a loyal fan base. He started off with Diddy, signed over there for a bit, and then has just, you know, kind of consistently released music. He's went more towards the rock side, showing up on Warped Tour and stuff like that, but he is technically a good rapper.
Okay.
I mean, nowhere near Eminem, but I mean, he is a technically servable rapper, yes.
Okay.
That's what you want, is technically servable.
Yeah, he's like, you know, it's like how Denny's has servable pancakes. They're not as good as IHOP, but it's all within the same realm.
Understood. All right, the first clip we're going to hear is the one that I guess started this most recent volley, and it's not alike. It's from Eminem's most recent album, Kamikaze. Now, before we play it, Jensen, why did he come after Machine Gun Kelly? Like, why did he start up a new round of beef?
Well, like all good beefs, it started with a tweet from 2012, which is the idea that Machine Gun Kelly, when he was 21 years old, made a comment about 16-year-old Haley, who's the daughter of Eminem, you remember from all those years back.
Sure.
At that point, Machine Gun Kelly did hear that maybe Eminem was not happy about that tweet. By the way, in the tweet, he basically says she's very attractive in a more rude way, but then says in the most respectful way because Eminem is king. So this thing should never have really hurt Eminem, but it gives you a quick look into his ego. And then from there, Machine Gun Kelly believes that he was banned from rapping or appearing on Shade 45, so he mentions that, and that's it. That's all this came from.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So here's from Kamikaze. Here's Eminem talking about MG Kelly.
Next time you don't gotta use Tech Nine if you wanna come at me with a submachine gun. And I'm talking to you, but you already know who the fuck you are, Kelly. I don't use Sublime. Insurance us don't sneak this. But keep commenting on my daughter, Haley. I keep on telling motherfuckers, but just in case you forgot, really you need jaw memory jarred like strawberry or pineapple apricot jelly. I respond early, but this time you ask about the sound off like a nickel cock to me, Glock to me, God. Let me put a nickel for silence on this little non-threatening blonde, very cornball taking shots at me. You're not ready, fool. Break yourself like rock steady queen. Obviously, I'm not getting through. We can get it popping like red and black, letting off.
Whoa, he can rap. Right. He can still rap.
Somewhere in there, in that Micro Machines guy commercial, he's making fun of him by saying that Machine Gun Kelly went on a Tech N9ne song and kind of said some subliminal stuff. And I mean, he mentions him like on other songs, even on the album. It's just sort of a very easy target for him on that record, and it comes up a couple times.
All right, so then MG Kelly comes back with a diss track that I think a lot of people were impressed with called Rap Devil. What do we need to know about this?
Just that when you're not as big as Eminem and Eminem comes at you and you're a serviceable rapper, this is what you should do. Immediately come out with something. And I think it's a pretty impressive, everyone had low expectations. I think it's pretty impressive. And anytime you can say to a man, you have a weird beard, I'm all aboard.
Somebody grab some clippers. A beard is weird. Tough talk from a rapper paying millions for security a year. I think my dad's gone crazy. Yeah, Haley, you right. Dad's always mad, cooped up in the studio, yelling at the mic. You sober and bored, huh? I know. About to be 46 years old, dog. Talking about, I'ma call up Trick. Man, you sound like a bitch. Man, I can handle your ish. Mad about something I said in 2012. Took you 6 years and a surprise album just to come with a diss.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Granted, you said he's just a serviceable rapper, but he's short. He's got a weird beard. He wears weird hats. Now he's got a lot of money and he has security. Really, Machine Gun Kelly? This is it?
Listen, there are things in that rap song that are just kind of things that we all have said, but no one has said on record, which is like, you're lonely, you're bored, you are 46 years old, you're still making fun of children.
Right.
Those are things. I don't think Machine Gun Kelly is necessarily the medium in which we wish it was said. But then again, Eminem doesn't pick targets that will come back correctly. Like, for example, right now, Jay Electronica, who's a rapper out of New York City that's kind of a mythical creature in hip-hop, very good lyricist, signed to Jay-Z, all these things, he's been taking shots at Eminem. Eminem has completely ignored them. So we don't have the rapper that we want coming. I mean, Ja Rule is not who I ever wanted to go at Eminem.
Right.
When I came on your show and we listened to Drake and Meek Mill or Drake and Pusha T, like, we heard three incredible rappers go at it there. We've never had that opportunity with them.
That is a very interesting point, Jensen. I totally see where you're coming from. All right, so your thoughts on Eminem's latest volley in this beef, Killshot.
I mean, I think it's all semi-mediocre between him and Machine Gun Kelly. I don't think there's anything here that really is worth talking about. It, both sides, you're sort of like, dudes, I don't know, stop doing this. it just feels like if you like what rap beef is, but you want it to be more white and serviceable at a Hot Topic, boy, do I have a battle for you.
Okay. Here's Eminem.
Stand, son, listen, man, dad isn't mad, but how you gonna name yourself after a damn gun and have a man bun? Giant's woke, eyes open, undeniable, supplying smoke, got the fire stoke. Say you got me in a scope, but you grazed me. I say one call the Interscope and you Swayze. Your reply got the crowd yelling, woo. So before you die, let's see who can out-petty who with your corny lines. Slim your old Al Kelly, ooh, but I'm 45 and I'm still outselling you. By 29, I had 3 albums that it blew.
Whoa.
I don't know if that's really something I need to hear more than once.
I will say this. He did say he was going to make him Swayze.
Yeah.
And obviously that means like ghost, dead, whatever. It was released on September 14th. Patrick Swayze's date of death.
I
That's nuts.
I mean, that is remarkable research, but I also think maybe he just meant he's going to make him a good dancer with Jennifer Grey.
We don't need you anymore, Jensen.
What
we
about this? Killshot is a movie about a veteran assassin hunting down a guy named Coulson. That's Machine Gun Kelly's middle name.
I mean, okay. We know what Eminem is doing holed up in his Detroit mansion
he
now.
He is Googling stuff left and right.
But the cool thing is, just yesterday, I mean, this might be coming down. I don't know why Eminem would continue to do this, because Machine Gun Kelly went on stage at a concert wearing the logo of Killshot that Eminem put out of Machine Gun Kelly's head in a crosshairs. Machine Gun Kelly sees this as the marketing tool that he needs, so if I was Eminem, I would back away. At the same time, Machine Gun Kelly has another completely different beef going on with G-Eazy over Halsey, the pop star. Iggy Azalea came in and did a tweet saying the Eminem battle response wasn't very good. So the Caucasian meter is very, very high right now.
Yeah. And let's be honest, Machine Gun Kelly is opening up for Fall Out Boy, just for another added white bonus in there.
Yeah. Ali did the research.
Just
wow.
Saying.
All right, last
this
question.
Whole thing sounds like a Skechers ad.
Last question. Eminem obviously still has very formidable rapping skills.
Yes.
If he could just find something that we care about to rap about, it would be great, right?
It's very difficult. As a 46-year-old man, I'm 38 myself and used to be a rapper, and I always say it's difficult to find many words to rhyme with mortgage or tax credit. These are all very difficult things to rap out. Gray hairs.
But Jay-Z does it.
Yeah, he's an anomaly. I mean, he really, truly is. Someone like Jay-Z has been able to make that crossover, but still people make fun of him for talking about art and museums. And I mean, people do still get their shots in, but yeah, it is a one-in-a-million situation to become a rapper who's able to excel in their 40s.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for breaking down for us. Always a pleasure to have you on the program. By the way, follow him on Twitter at Jensen Klan. That's with a C, not the bad one. Jensen Klan 88. And we'll see you later in the week. I'm taking a vacation. Jensen, you're going to be sitting in for me soon. So we'll see you back on the show. All right, buddy?
That's right. See you soon.
Take it, Jensen.
Okay, thanks, man.
Bye now.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
Let's take a look at last night's Emmy broadcast, which may still be on. I'm not sure.
I got to tell you, Michael Che and Colin Jost, who are the Weekend Update hosts on Saturday Night Live, are not at all funny to me.
No.
I heard, again, I didn't see it last night, I heard that it looked like one of those videos that you force a hostage to make.
Yes,
it
did.
To get money from the parents.
And I always thought, you know, okay, well, maybe they're just under the crunch. They have just a week to get put together a whole thing.
Sure.
But for the Emmys, they'll have some time to prepare for stuff like this.
I don't know if you know this, the first Emmys were held back in 1949. Things were very different back then. Gas was 17 cents a gallon. Mm-hmm. A new home cost $7,000. And we all agreed that Nazis were bad.
Yeah.
See?
That's not a terrible line.
Right, but is that what you're going for on the Emmys? Is not a terrible line?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, and that you could see exactly what they're going for. And there's a kernel of a great joke in there, but it's a first run at it.
Yeah.
Why not go ahead and...
And their pacing is very slow.
Really dull.
Very slow, and they wait for the other one to respond and laugh so they could look at them smugly.
They just are so smug. They really are. They find themselves so funny. I don't know. Here's another clip.
I say a quick hello to the thousands of you here in the audience tonight and to the hundreds watching at home. Hi, Silver Lining Senior Center.
You know who's not? But my mother's not watching.
What?
Well, she said she doesn't like watching white award shows because you guys don't thank Jesus enough. That's true.
That's not that wasn't a joke.
No.
It was just him saying that.
Yeah.
Why are they there? How come they're there? Why are they there?
What's the how come? Let me ask you this. Didn't they have a bunch of funny people come out and open the show before the host even came out, which made the host look even worse because they weren't as good as the people that started it? No, really, not even that, huh?
I didn't find the opening very funny either.
It looked like they were doing a dress rehearsal for the opening, because none of the dance moves were really dancey. The background was this, like, gray slate background. It seemed like they were like, okay, but during the show, we'll have a bunch of stuff back here. And it seemed like a run-through to me.
It was very Saturday Night Live-ish, where they don't really have time to polish it.
Yes.
And they're reading off the cue cards, and they're sort of making each other laugh. It was really...
Yeah.
I thought that was the one of the worst award show hosts ever.
Yeah, it was
so
not
at least
good.
They brought out Maya and Fred.
Oh dear.
And
okay, former SNL alum as well, both very funny people.
And this is sort of what. Oh, that's the wrong one. I'm sorry, Chip. I'm looking for Maya and Fred. There you go. Yes.
So you guys know everything there is to know about the Emmys.
Okay.
Sure. Great, because there are so many nominees in so many categories, and we're going to be coming to you with a lot of questions tonight. You must have done research for weeks.
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
So much research. Yeah.
So much research. It was like, this is me normally, and this is me researching.
She makes a face.
Wow. So did you memorize it all, or do you have notes?
We memorized
it.
We
have notes.
Yeah, we made a note for ourselves to memorize it.
But, you know.
Whoa. Well, it sounds like you guys are very prepared.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm glad it sounds like it.
You know what? We're actually over-prepared.
Yeah, it's like dial it back. You know, it's like TMFI, too much fascinating information.
Yeah, too much.
This is
okay,
tedious. Well, when we have a question, we're going to come looking for you guys.
You better, little man.
Okay, so they didn't even ask him a question. That was just the setup for the bit.
Yeah, at least they didn't go back to them often.
Oh, it was brutal.
It was.
That sounds rough, you guys.
It was brutal.
I laughed once, though, at the opening, you guys. Once. If I could just share this one joke, because it was actually funny. But that's
it. It was in the middle of a dull joke.
Well, Michael Che was talking about The Handmaid's Tale. He said it takes place in an imaginary future where an entire group of people are violently forced to work and make babies against their will. It's what black people call history. But then, see, that's funny. That's funny. But then he said it's roots for white women. That's funny.
Right, that one line is funny.
All right, okay. That's all I had. That's all I laughed at.
All right, so the Oscars director got up and won Best Directing for another award show or whatever. And no one saw this coming.
I'm really grateful to be here, but it's bittersweet. The person most proud at this moment would be my mom, and she passed away just 2 weeks ago. My part of my heart is broken. I don't think it will ever be repaired, but she's in me, and she always will be. Mom always believed in finding the sunshine in things, and she adored my girlfriend, Jan. Jan, you are the sunshine in my life. And Mom was right. Don't ever let go of your sunshine. You wonder why I don't like to call you my girlfriend? Because I want to call you my wife.
And I'll tell you what, here's the thing is that if you knew that that was coming, mm-hmm. You're like, okay, we don't need another public. This was the first time that everyone woke up.
Yeah. And people jumped up. Benedict Cumberbatch jumped up. He was like clapping over his head. Seeing people's reaction to this moment that no one expected.
Sort of heartbreak mixed with beauty. It was an amazing moment.
I loved it.
That's the first time I've heard it sound like there was an audience in the room.
Yes.
Because that's the first time they remember anything happening.
Yeah. They're like, whoa, what's happening? We're waking up.
So that was one highlight. And then the other for me was Henry Winkler.
Oh, nice.
Henry Winkler winning his first Emmy.
Yeah.
In I don't know how many years, and he gives this speech.
Okay. I only have 37 seconds. I wrote this 43 years ago. Okay. Okay. Can I just say, Skip Brittenham said to me a long time ago, if you stay at the table long enough, the chips come to you. And tonight, I got to clear the table. If you get a chance to work with Bill Hader or Alec Berg, run, don't walk. Thank you for producing us, for creating us, for directing us, and for Bill for acting with us, and all of our wonderful writers, Sherry Thompson and wonderful Sharon, Sherry Goldberg, an extraordinary publicist, Cliff and Aaron and Chris, who represent me almost for the first time. I feel represented. I can't stop yet. My wife, Stacy. Oh, my God. My cast and crew. And the kids, Jed, Zoe, and Max, you can go to bed now. Daddy won!
Oh. Aren't his kids like 40?
And wasn't it the first award of the night? And it's 5 p.m.?
It's Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, guys. Bill Mugg is in the studio and he's right. Standing in front of a microphone.
He was invited.
Should I turn it on?
Yeah, he's invited guest.
He's invited. Okay.
We wanted him to have him come in here.
Always checking.
Someone needs to fill Kevin in on these things.
Seriously.
Oh, I'm very filled in on this.
How are you, Muggsy?
I'm all right. I'm feeling great.
That's
feeling
a microphone in front of you.
But we're on the radio. We're supposed to project, right?
Holy crap, you're screaming.
Am I screaming?
I don't know why you're... I'm all right, bud.
This coffee is great.
Holy
crap. Wow. This
cocaine coffee is great.
Yeah, no kidding. Did you happen to watch the Dodgers game last night with your mom?
I did not watch it with my mom because I didn't want any of her negativity rubbing off on
me. Negativity? She's the Dodgers' biggest fan.
Yeah, so I had to leave the house and watch it elsewhere.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it worked out for everybody then. Hit it, Steve.
Mama Mugs. Mama, mama, mama Mugs. Mama, mama, mama Mugs. She's one badass, too. Mama Mugs. Mama, mama, mama Mugs. Mama, mama, mama Mugs. She hates the Dodger blue. It's time for Mama Mugs. Give me some Mama Mugs.
L'chaim! We don't check in very often because we get so much hate mail when we do, but Beer Mug's actual mom joins us on the phone on K-Rock right now. Hello, my dear. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Thank you so much for getting up early and talking to us. We appreciate it. Did you watch the game last night?
Yes, I did, from beginning to end.
How does it make you feel to hear that your son had to leave the house to watch the game anywhere else?
Well, I don't blame him because my big thing is no lead is big enough.
Right.
So yeah. Well, even with 8 runs, I was nervous that they were going to catch up.
It was an 8-2 game. The Dodgers dominated from the first inning. Didn't Jock Peterson hit a leadoff homer and they never looked back?
Yep.
Yes, that's right.
I don't know the statistics, but I would guess 8-2 is a pretty difficult to overcome margin.
Not baseball. With the Dodgers.
With everyone.
With the Dodgers, they're in first place, Mama Mugs. They're in first place. You can't do any better than that.
By a half game? They can do better than that.
There's a couple of weeks left, right?
Yeah, there's a couple of weeks left. And by the way, they have the Giants coming up, which is going to be no sweat. Arizona, I think they can take most of those games. I mean, their schedule is not insurmountable is what I'm telling you.
San Diego and San Francisco play them hard. They love to destroy them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And even if they're not in the running for playoff games, they love to destroy them.
Be the spoiler, right. All right, what's the last time we talked to you, you had some real concerns about some of the players on the team. Who are you worried about at this point as we start to really seriously think about the playoffs?
Well, I worry about all of them because they're streaky hitters. The relief pitchers are streaky, and there's only 11 games left. So I worry about all of them.
But isn't that...
Puig was on fire.
But let me ask you a question. Isn't that true of every team? Doesn't every team have players that you worry about because it's getting down to the end of the season?
Yes, but they could have been in a much better position had they not had streaky players.
Had they played perfectly, you mean? Yes, I see where you're going.
Had they never lost a game, Kevin, it would be better. You are right about Yasiel Puig. He is way too far into this league to be still kind of making the base running errors that he's making. And that's one day that's going to cost you an important game.
Yes, and he's a very streaky hitter. The other day he hit 3 home runs, and that was fabulous. But yesterday he didn't do very much.
When you look around the potential opponents in the postseason and even beyond into the World Series, what teams are you most worried about, Mama Mugs?
Chicago.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah, they're the number one in their division, and they're tough. Atlanta is number one, and Chicago are number one.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I worry about Chicago. If they play Atlanta, they have a chance. If they play Chicago, it's tough.
So, if they play Chicago, you fear they won't even get out of the first round of the playoffs.
Yes, that's my belief.
You said it's tough. You didn't say impossible, which is, I think, growth.
Well,
for you.
I'm,
for you specifically.
I'm always leave a little leeway there.
You don't normally.
You don't at all, ever. Ever.
Doesn't happen.
Mama Mugs, now that we're, you know, a whole season have a whole season behind us after that terrible seventh game loss in the World Series. Don't you think that is the kind of thing, though, because you've got all the same guys back? Don't you think that's the kind of thing that's going to really just push them even harder to make sure they don't feel that heartbreak again?
I just want them to get into the World Series, and then I can relax a little bit, and then they can do what they want.
Put Mama Mugs on the phone.
Yeah.
Wow.
What are you talking about? They can relax if they get into the World Series. Who's ever heard of that?
Yeah. No, they can relax because they were there, because this is a very hard stretch they're going through.
Right.
And if it weren't for Kenta Maeda, they would be much further ahead.
Mm. So you don't like Kenta Maeda?
I like him, but he has a heart condition and he can't play often. And when he does play, it's not like lights out anymore.
You mean Kenley Jansen. You said Kenta Maeda, Mom.
I'm sorry. Kenley Jansen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
She hates heart
can't
conditions.
Can't rely on Kenley Jansen. Sorry.
Heart conditions are the worst, right?
Awful.
Hate it.
Guy, right?
So are you able to enjoy the last 11 games?
No.
Are you able?
I don't enjoy them. I'm going to sit on the edge of the sofa and bite my nails.
Okay, but at the end of last night's game, for example, when the last out happened and it was 8-2, did you go, yes?
I thank goodness that they won and was nervous in the ninth inning because they, you know, could always lose.
Right, but they didn't. We're talking about the past now. They won. That game's over.
I know.
Okay.
Right, but what if they go back,
they
Kevin?
Tonight they face a very tough pitcher,
right.
Freeland, who won 15 games and lost only 7. Yeah. And he is a tough pitcher. So
okay. All right.
Here we go again.
Right?
Mugs, here we go again. Mugs, how did you end up being such a sunshiny, optimistic guy growing up in a house with Mama Mugs?
I just was just trying to do the opposite of what Mama Mugs did my whole life.
Oh, so you're a Dodger fan?
Yes.
Oh, I got you.
Yes.
All right. I'm sure we'll talk to you as we get into the playoffs, Mama Mugs. We love you, and we appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mama.
Mama Mugs. She hates the Dodger blue.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show, K-Rock.
You guys are so lucky you didn't just hear Michael Snyder's talking.
Seriously.
I thought it was a great idea.
That's a genius idea.
Genius idea.
Wow. On brand, right?
Right?
Our friend Michael Snyder is the executive editor of IndieWire and editor-at-large at Variety. He also should have hosted last night's 70th annual Emmy Awards, but he did not get the call. How are you, sir?
I did not get the call. I am good. First off, I want to give Kevin a shout-out and say thank you.
Kevin.
I downloaded the Radeon DurfCom app. I've been listening to K-Rock HD2, Freddie Snakeskin since then. It's a great app. I knew what you were getting at.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Most people didn't see that far ahead.
Yeah.
Right.
Radeon DurfCom. Download it today.
I like it. So, Michael, you were in the press room last night. You got a chance to see all the stars up close when they came back after they won their statues. Good time. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. I mean, there were some great stories. Henry Winkler, I know you guys were talking about earlier.
He's the greatest.
He is also just one of the greatest, like, in Hollywood, period. The nicest guy.
Just the nicest human being. And a lot of times that doesn't go together with Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So when the nice guys win, it's really great. And did you see he even on Instagram posted a photo of him and Ron Howard?
I love that.
Yeah. So great reunion stories. So there were some interesting stories last night. A lot of unexpected wins, a lot of disappointment, a lot of surprises.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking earlier, Michael, that some of these categories were so stacked that you were always going to disappoint somebody because there are just too many great performances in some of these categories.
Yeah. And some of these categories could have done with like 3 or 4 more nominees, too, because they still snubbed a lot of people. But,
right.
You know, so you weren't going to lose no matter what. A lot of great shows. But nonetheless, I was disappointed that Atlanta was blanked.
Amen.
You know, it should have gotten a lot more than what it did.
It was 0-16 last night.
Yeah, it was.
Right?
That was surprising because it had done so well the previous year, and I really was expecting to pull off a win in comedy.
Agree. Yes, season 2 was even stronger than season 1.
Yeah, yeah. By Teddy Perkins, of course.
Teddy Perkins, let alone Brian Tyree Henry, the Woods episode.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Right, let's talk about Teddy Perkins for a minute, because this is something we haven't.
Yeah.
So, for folks who don't watch Atlanta, they did an episode where Donald Glover was dressed up, playing essentially a Michael Jackson character.
Right.
By the way, Drudge Report headline this morning, black actor in whiteface at Emmys. You know they're going to try to turn it into some sort of race thing, right?
Oh, jeez.
So last night in the audience was this character, and people, I guess, were thinking it was Donald Glover. I heard a rumor that it was Lakeith Stanfield under the makeup.
And the thing is, both of those actors were there in the audience. They took photos. Mm-hmm. They were on the red carpet as well. Mm-hmm. So that's why the mystery's continuing. Oh. At first, we thought, it was Donald Glover, and we were hoping Atlanta would win so he would show up on stage as Teddy Perkins. But you're right. He was there in the audience as Donald Glover, as was Lakeith. So
why
the mystery is still there.
That?
Well, I think because we're talking about it today.
Sure, right? Just to be wacky.
It's total performance art. I mean, it's like the Tony Clifton of our time now, I think.
Good reference. I'll explain it to you after the break, Kevin.
Go back a few years.
So most of America, though, was going, who's that freak show in the audience? They had no idea what was going on, right?
But at least they're talking about it, right? Yeah. Because there was more entertainment, I tell you, from the winners and from the people in the audience than there actually was from the host.
Oh, man. No kidding.
And it was the audience, and it was the presenters, it was the winners who saved that show.
I feel like Saturday Night Live'd that show, which made it much worse.
Well, and I heard you guys talking about how it felt kind of like a dress rehearsal.
It did.
And
the opening number was painful.
It wasn't even
great. You agree?
Yeah.
It wasn't
even
fine-tuned. You couldn't even tell that this is a big deal, and they put more effort into it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just sort of like, we'll wing it.
Some of the pacing that might work on Weekend Update might not necessarily work hosting an award show.
And doesn't work on Weekend Update.
So.
honest.
Their timing sounded awful. As Allie pointed out, they just stopped and waited for the other host to react before they moved on.
Or the audience.
It just killed every bit of momentum. Now, I know the show was on NBC, and they like to promote NBC stars. Was there no one else they could think of other than Michael Che and Colin Jost to host that thing that's on NBC?
You know, in theory, the idea of giving it to the SNL folks, giving it to Lorne Michaels, not a bad idea. I mean, SNL is... but seriously, SNL is still, it's a phenomenon. It's winning all these Emmys. It's the only broadcast show that seems to be winning Emmys these days. People still do watch it. They've got a great cast. I mean, Kate McKinnon, Adi Bryant, the list goes on.
Do you watch it regularly?
Let them host it then.
I do watch SNL regularly.
It's just not good.
That's not true, Kevin.
It's hit or miss, but I think they've had more hit than miss lately. I'll defend SNL a little bit, maybe if they had the entire cast do more and not rely so much on Michael Che and Colin Jost, it would have been a different story. But
it was nice to see Kate McKinnon. It was nice to see what's his name.
Keenan Thompson.
Yeah. Nice to see Keenan Thompson up there doing things. I mean, I guess that was the idea, is spread the Saturday Night Live around, but it did seem a little bit undercooked for sure.
Yeah, and they should have spread it around a little bit more. So,
What was wrong with Fred and Maya? Why was that such a disaster?
Yeah, again, I think they're an acquired taste. They're very dry, both of them, especially Fred Armisen. So what might work in a sketch on, say, Portlandia might not necessarily work on a broad award show.
Here's a tiny clip of them.
All right, everyone, it is time to check in again with Fred and Maya. Are you guys ready this time?
Absolutely.
Yep, let her rip.
Are you ready or are you eating salad? I don't know, salad detective.
Well, Colin and I were just wondering, has there ever been a tie at the Emmys?
Yeah, you're wearing one. Thank you, good night.
You good?
Oh my God.
I think that weirdly actually plays better as audio than watched it last night.
The you good I found funny at the end of every one of those, but those were such giant wastes of time. It's like, if you're going to pick that to be your centerpiece, put something into it.
Well, what's interesting too is actually they were speeding through the awards relatively fast, so they actually had some extra time. Did you notice at the end of the night, Will Ferrell actually came out and slowly walked to the microphone?
I thought he was doing that just to take the time away from the hosts.
Well,
I was applauding.
I think there was something to be said that they were actually a little short, so they probably told Will, you know what, you can stretch it a little bit.
Yeah,
so
45 minutes in, I wound up tweeting, this thing's going to be over by 6,
because
they were going through it.
Yeah.
Which I kind of respected that they didn't do the long intros and here's this clip, here's this clip. It was just clip, 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 presenter, award.
Yeah, you know what they did, interestingly and different, is they actually showed the nominees before they brought out the presenters.
Yes. Right, which I felt was to shorten the show
And exactly. It worked.
But they would still come out and do the ridiculous banter about half the time. So now when they open the envelope, you're like, I don't even remember what category we're in now.
Right. And they forgot to announce the nominees. Like, what's going on here? It was a little jarring.
Weird.
Yeah. All right, we have to take a very quick break. Michael Snyder is here, executive editor of IndieWire, editor-at-large at Variety. We're talking about last night's 70th Annual Emmy Awards. We haven't really even talked about the winners. We'll do some of that when we return with Michael right after this on K-Rock.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show. K-Rock.
Our friend Michael Snyder is in studio with us. Follow him on Twitter at Franklin Avenue. Also IndieWire.com, Variety.com. He was at the Emmys last night. We haven't talked much about the winners, Michael, and I guess I have to start with this question on behalf of about 290 million Americans. If they tuned into the show last night, they thought, what the hell is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and why is it winning all these awards?
it's interesting. At the start of the night, Barry won a couple, and I ain't mad at it. I love Barry. You know, right. Bill Hader's fantastic. And then Maisel started winning a bunch. And those two shows have in common is that they're both about performers. They're both about acting, about Hollywood. And Hollywood loves itself some Hollywood.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you actually give voters a chance in Hollywood to vote on a show about their own profession, I guess they're going to vote for their own profession.
Do you think, like the Oscars seem to run into problems with picking all smaller movies that most people haven't seen, do you think they're going to run into this with the Emmys because there's so many different pay services and different sites to stream on? And
yeah. Yeah, that's the debate, and I don't know what the answer is because, you know, these are some really good shows. But yeah, it's there. A lot of them are on streaming services or on premium cable.
Yeah, I'm not saying not deserved at all. I'm just saying hard to find or you haven't found it yet for the most part.
And I think that's just the way it's going to be now because there are 500 scripted shows on TV and there are thousands of reality shows. And what I want to watch is very different from what you want to watch, and that's not going to change. So
there's no consensus show anymore that everybody.
There aren't many broad shows. I mean, you know, This Is Us was a pretty big show, you know, for NBC on a broadcast network. But you don't see many broadcast network shows get this kind of honor anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at the list of what Maisel beat for Outstanding Comedy Series, and all of them are on pay services, streaming services, with the exception of Black-ish. That was the only network show that was nominated in that category. And in fact, except for Saturday Night Live that you mentioned earlier and the Oscar telecast, broadcast TV won nothing else last night, right?
Completely zipped out. And for a network for like ABC, for example, which is a titan broadcast network, that Oscar win was the only win that it got. You know, none of its shows won. CBS only got 2 Emmys overall. So it's a different world now, and it's a little almost awkward now watching the Emmys on a broadcast network when there are no broadcast shows being honored on that telecast.
What's the primetime broadcast show you think really is getting rooked? Would it be This Is Us? Is that the one that ought to be winning Emmys right now?
You mentioned Black-ish. That's a great show. So I could see that winning something. The Good Place, I wouldn't have been mad if Ted Danson had won. I think a Good Place deserves more, and maybe we'll get some as that show carries on. There still are some really good broadcast shows. It's just they're being totally eclipsed by the kinds of shows that you can do on streaming. Maybe you only have to do 8 episodes, and so you do your 8 best episodes as opposed to 22 episodes on network.
A lot of people thought the last Game of Thrones season, and that aired in what, like 2001 or something?
I was in high school. Yes.
Was subpar for Game of Thrones compared to previous seasons, yet it still won Best Drama last night.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, HBO still does a really good job of promoting its shows with the awards. Thrones only won a couple last night, so Dinklage won for supporting actor, but then when it wasn't picking up any of the other awards, I thought, well, maybe this does leave the door open for the Americans to win in its final season or Handmaid's Tale to repeat. And interestingly, Handmaid's Tale didn't get anything last night.
Yeah.
Americans got a couple, so that's great. It got for writing and also for Matthew Reese, so I was happy about that.
For all of these wins, do they have to have a push? Do they have to spend money on it? Do they have to be supported? Like, literally, they have to put them in front of the people's face to vote for?
It seems to help to some degree, and campaigning has gotten way out of control. It's crazy, the amount of campaigning. It's like the Oscars now, in terms of the amount of events that they do, the money that folks like Netflix and HBO spend. But there is some payoff. I got to say, for example, Henry Winkler did a great job campaigning. He did every podcast, every interview. He showed up at every event. People love Henry Winkler, but it was a nice reminder for voters who may not have watched Barry that, hey, Henry Winkler's here. He's a national treasure. You should vote for him.
Right.
So I think that helped.
And by the way, if you haven't watched Barry, you're a bad person.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good. All right, one more thing, and then I have a final question for you, Michael, and that is I did not see the show last night because the Seahawks were on Monday Night Football, and that was a disaster of a different kind. But Kevin and Ali tell me that Betty White is starting at 96 to lose a step, and that makes me very, very nervous.
Yeah.
Did it strike you that way? Because to me, I know she's really old, but the whole thing has been she's super sharp. And she's not showing her age. And it seemed like last night I was a little bummed because although she's 96, she's starting to sound and act like she's 96.
Starting to act like she's 96.
And
yeah.
Of course that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of a little bummer.
Yeah, because a couple years ago she could still host a show.
Right.
She she had a show on NBC. So you're right. I was a little
saddened. It's kind of a bummer. Yeah, it's coming. Of course, it should have happened 10 years ago, but...
No, yeah. It's not coming. She's fine. Betty's fine.
There are a lot of these like 90-year-olds who are still at the top of their game. Norman Lear, a good example. I mean, he's still sharp as a tack.
Look at Dick Van Dyke in the Mary Poppins trailer.
The excitement.
There are still some old people out there getting it done. Betty has done her... She's done her part.
Oh,
though,
agreed.
Right? She's done her part.
Yeah.
Agreed. All right. Does it matter that we're going to get an announcement any minute now that the ratings were down again for the Emmys last night? Does that even matter? Is it built in now to the story?
It's built in now to the story. It's inevitable. Okay. It's just the way it goes. And again, it's true for all of these award shows because there are other options. There's so much TV. I mean, you were watching the Seahawks last night, Brudda Bean. So it's everyone's...
He just Brudda
Beaned
you!
Yeah, that's a whole other thing we got to talk about all.
Well, you are from Hawaii, so I'm sure you take a great interest in my ukulele lessons.
I listened to that segment with great concern, but we will talk about that offline, Brudda Bean.
Okay. All right. Very good, sir. Where should we go for all of your outstanding coverage of the Emmys last night, Michael?
IndieWire.com, IndieWire on Twitter, on Instagram, all that good stuff.
You're the best, man. Thanks for coming in.
Bong bong.
Kevin and Bean on K-Rock. K-R-O-Q.
Allie's here now with another look at what's happening on a Tuesday.
Well, early numbers. The 2018 Emmy Awards are down around 10% from last year. That's according to early data. We'll know much more when they do the whole time zone adjustments for
Thanks, Colin
the nation.
Jost.
Right? Thanks, Michael Che.
Right?
Those guys were as bad as we thought they were going to be.
Oh, yeah, they were. I feel
it's
pretty
such
good
a
about
bummer.
It.
Allie,
yeah.
You were
you
delighted.
Feel good.
I was delighted. I know you guys think I'm awful for wanting to be right about them being horrible, but
Oh, no, God. I believe they're horrible. Yeah. I just thought maybe they could step it up because it's the Emmys.
You wanted them to.
Yes.
That's the difference between you and
I. And I was wrong.
I just wanted them to remain sucky so I could just be correct.
I'm sorry. I watched it, but I fell asleep.
Mm. He might have been correct in that. No. For the first time ever. Guys, SNL coming back for their 44th season. It's premiering on September 29th.
All right.
Would you like to know who the guests are?
Sure.
Adam Driver will be hosting.
Okay.
All right.
Will be a second time hosting.
Yeah, he was pretty good last time.
Is Adam Driver your season premiere guest?
No.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm surprised. Guest host? No, I'm surprised at that as well. I mean, he's a big star.
Right.
But usually you want big star power. You want Jennifer Lawrence or somebody or, you know, somebody
and where's
like
she
that.
Been?
Yeah.
And there's usually a tie into a huge project that's going on.
Right.
So they're topical or whatever.
All I know is at Black Klansman was the last thing he was in. Maybe it's something coming out in a couple weeks I don't know about. But musical guest, Kanye West, that will be his 7th appearance on the show. But I was thinking about someone that could host the show as well as be the musical guest.
Right.
Who has a really big movie coming out the following weekend.
Okay.
Did they not think about Lady Gaga or Maybe she's just too busy promoting.
The following weekend.
Might be the following weekend.
I don't know.
But it's the season premiere. Adam Driver? I mean, I love you, Kylo Ren. But
I agree it's a little underwhelming.
Yeah.
I agree. But Kanye, by the way, as over him as I am in some aspects, he's so unpredictable, you have to tune in to see what he's going to do.
That's something that some people would say. Yeah.
That's the kind of thing I might tape. And then if I hear it was weird or amazing, then I might then fast forward through it.
Okay. All right. Well, there you have it.
You won't watch it, but you'll fast forward through it.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I mean, we're all going out on limbs here, aren't
right,
we?
Right.
Amazing. Well, Julie Chen is stepping down from The Talk on CBS. This is 1 week after her husband, Les Moonves, left the CBS Corporation under pressure, they're saying in this article. Some pressure, yeah.
A bit.
A bit of pressure. So her decision is effective immediately. She's going to address the decision through a videotaped message to viewers on today's episode. So she's not even showing up to say, this will be my last one. Goodbye. Thank you.
So she quit at halftime.
Well, yeah.
I don't know that I would say that.
It's interesting, though.
Seems like her hand was forced, perhaps.
And all the ladies on The Talk were saying they want transparency. They want to know the findings of this investigation with Les Moonves. Sharon Osbourne walked back her support of her husband. So I imagine it wouldn't be the most comfortable set to return to, even for just the announcement. So I get that, but come on. The sources say she will still continue to host the CBS reality show Big Brother. I'm not sure if you saw it last week. Julie Chen, that goes by Julie Chen, decided to end the show with, "Good night from me, Julie Chen Moonves." For the first time ever, she said his name.
Is that right?
Which was, you know, a nice little flip off, not only to the victims, but also to the network as well. So, don't know how long her contract is at Big Brother, but I can't imagine that the people at CBS were like, oh, I see what you did there.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Big Brother's still on?
Apparently so.
And I think it's a big 800th,
hit. Is it really been
a big hit? Yeah. Every summer, it's a top 10 show.
It's insane.
Huh. I don't get it.
I don't either.
Remember when we found out that Roseanne was going to be dead on the show?
Yes.
That's how they were going to do it, because it was John Goodman that said in an interview, he's like, I mean, I guess I'm going to be sad because my wife died. And everyone's like,
I'm sorry. That's how they're going
to? I don't think you were supposed to with that in the front. So Roseanne has taken it a step farther. She was on a YouTube show and she shared that her character will die from an opioid overdose. So she's saying how she's going to die on the show, which...
Okay, that's a nice plot point to spoil, I guess, for fans.
I guess I have a question, though. Does anyone care that much?
No.
Because I think if you're dying, we understand she's not going to be on the show, and she's dying. Does it matter how?
It does. I think it matters how.
Huh.
I mean, I think that's a plot point that you, if you are invested in the story and the storyline, that's something you don't want spoiled ahead of time. But I know she wasn't happy about it. She thought it was a terrible idea.
Yeah, she said, there's nothing I can do about it. It's done. It's over. Yeah, they killed her. Okay. All right.
She was clearly the star of the show. She was the draw for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Do you think there'll be enough interest in the supporting cast, as good as they are, to continue to stick with that show without Roseanne?
That's tough for me to answer because I never liked that show because of Roseanne.
But yeah, John Goodman is so good, and Maury Metcalf is so good.
Yeah.
I mean, they do have a good supporting cast. I just wonder if it holds without a center.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, time will tell. Am I right?
Sure.
I don't know why I did that voice. Let's talk about some birthdays. Jada Pinkett Smith, James Marsden, Jason Sudeikis, Aisha Tyler, and Brazilian soccer player Ronaldo. And that's what's happening.
The Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Allie,
yeah.
your family has Boston roots?
Yeah, I'm the only one in my whole family that was born in California.
How about
that?
Yeah,
my parents moved out here in the late 60s. For what was going to be 3 years, stayed about 30.
Okay. So I guess the question that was asked on The Daily Show recently, and they sent National Treasure Roy Wood Jr. to Boston to figure it out, is why is your city so racist? You have any thoughts on that? Why is Boston so racist?
I shouldn't laugh, but it does have that reputation.
It does.
It's a very blue-collar kind of town.
Right.
And
white face.
But blue collar doesn't necessarily mean racist, does it?
No, it doesn't.
No, but white face on top of blue collar. I don't know. It's a combination. Well, let's see how The Daily Show handled it. Here's how the piece started.
Boston, home to Mark Wahlberg, Donnie Wahlberg, and all of the rest of the Wahlbergs.
And by the way, the graphics that they put up included not only Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, who are from Boston, but Leonardo DiCaprio, Jeremy Renner, like every white dude they had coming from Boston.
It's also home to Spotlight, the team of Boston Globe reporters who exposed the city's church sex scandal. I'm here because the Spotlight team has been asking another uncomfortable question. How racist is Boston? For decades, people have called Boston racist for numerous reasons. The Red Sox were the last baseball team to integrate. Bostonians violently resisted desegregation. Even in 2017, fans at Fenway Park called Adam Jones the N-word.
I mean, come on with the come on, right? On that.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's not good.
And all this got Spotlight curious. Reporter Akilah Johnson.
So we wanted to look at why does Boston have the racist reputation and why does it deserve it?
How do you measure racism?
Well, you do it in a
Like how many times the N-word is said in a day? Like a negrometer?
No.
The N-word meter.
No.
Okay.
So one study we found showed that the median net worth of white families in Boston was $247,500.
Holy crap.
Wow. Really? $247,500 for white folks. This is going to blow your mind.
Okay, that blows my mind.
Yeah, that really does.
It should blow your mind. I mean, you know, it's got some of the richest counties, you know, Massachusetts has some of the richest counties in America, but still, a quarter of $1 million average? Okay, now that's white folks. Listen to black families. This you're going to want to source.
Compare that to the median net worth of black families in Boston, which was $8.
What?
Like counting in thousands? Like $8,000?
No, just eight.
$8. $8. That's not even a grande soy latte.
In essence, net worth is what you own minus what you owe. And black folks in Boston don't own a lot.
Does that seem possible?
It doesn't even seem possible, let alone...
Doesn't, but this is a reporter for the Boston newspaper who's saying it. I don't think she's in on a joke here. I think she's reporting it accurately. So Roy Wood Jr. did the only reasonable thing, which is to go down to Fenway Park and interview white people about whether Boston is racist or not. Huh, I wonder what they say.
Surely the people of Boston must be feeling all that structural racism. To find out, I went to one of the city's most beloved cathedrals, Fenway Park.
I don't see that racism myself, honestly.
No, I don't think Boston's a racist city.
I think that we've got a lot of, attention with our sports being in the media.
So Boston's racist reputation is a conspiracy formed by people who hate Boston sports teams for winning all the damn time.
Yes. They love to hate us.
Come on, they hate us because they hate us.
I mean...
That's a very Boston thing to say, right? This is amazing. All right, more white people.
Yeah, I don't think of Boston as a racist city at all. True.
So how do you know?
Yeah. I don't feel it. You know, it's just a gut feel. I don't feel like it's racist. I've just never encountered it.
Huh.
And these are all
white
people?
Yeah,
these are all white people?
Those are all white people.
Interesting.
Who aren't feeling the racism. All right. So then he goes to another part of town and interviews maybe some people who have felt the racism.
Huh. The Spotlight says the city has a race problem. Why haven't these Bostonians seen it? Ah, I get it. I've been asking the wrong people. If you want to know if Jurassic Park is safe, you don't ask the dinosaurs.
It's not as racist as it used to be, but there are some blatant problems.
A white person walks into a room in Boston, they don't want to think about that I'm the only white person here.
On a scale of Jazzy Jeff to Jeff Sessions,
How uncomfortable is it for black people? Tell me when to stop.
All right, so he's moving his hand from one side to the other. Tell me when to stop.
It's Jeff Sessions right here. Stop.
Jazzy Jeff right. or Jeff Sessions?
So about, what's that, about 60, 70% stop. Comfortability. Not yeah. quite. Hey, boy, go home, right. but definitely
know
not.
Know your what's neighborhood. Up? Know where you are allowed. Know where you're wanted.
All right, so wow. the final segment, he decides that the only way to unite the city is to create a mascot, which is the woke walrus. That's the suit that he's wearing. So he's wearing a big walrus head, and he's got a what looks like a Red Sox jersey that says woke on it. So he's trying to get a chant going to bring the people together.
What these people really needed was a mascot, so I gave them one. Introducing Wokey the Walrus. Who's got the best baseball?
Boston!
Who's got the best football?
Boston!
Who's number one in creating a system where structurally black people don't always get the same opportunities?
Boston!
Working already. I'm not sure if it's working already, but Roy Wood Jr., no. very funny on The Daily Show. You should watch the whole piece. Quick break. Christopher Titus joins us next on K-Rock.
The Kevin and Bean Show, the world famous K-Rock.
Christopher Titus.
Yeah?
just right, late. Thanks for stopping
laid,
in.
You laid that out there. Thanks for having me on, guys. Sorry I was late. Okay.
It felt like there was something else coming. I don't know what happened there.
You're finally here.
So I came across the late guys like I had stolen gold bars from Edward Norton today, man. I broke every law. I was in the center section. There was a bike lane. There was a kid on a scooter and a motorized scooter and a bike lane that he just, I was like, you don't matter. I got to get Kevin and Bean. And I was still 4 minutes late. And you guys were like, he's Titus. Is late to us. We're legends. And you guys are. You guys are from the time moved to LA.
I feel Take like Bean just meant you're finally here for the first time.
Ah, that's
yes,
true,
that's
too.
What so, I meant. Yeah. I wasn't at all being critical of you running late this morning.
But I also
no.
said this. If this is the first time I'm here after as long as I've been in this town, what did I do to irritate you guys 20 years ago?
That's a great
that
question.
Just paid off. Because well, I like to figure it out.
I know we hated you.
Yeah, right. Right. I remember that. I remember
why?
That.
But why did we hate you? Was he dumb, was it your dumb face? What was it?
My stupid TV show? Was it my TV show?
Titus was great.
I don't think so. I don't think that was
I'm
it.
I'm totally making up we hated him. I didn't. Oh, he okay. was asking what happened, so I was just answering
no,
a
there's
question.
There's something.
There's got to be. No, I'm saying there's got to be.
But I'm fine. We're good now.
Okay.
We're absolutely good
now. On our first date, I was late. See, look at that. That's horrible.
Is it possible that there was something and none of us remember it?
That's possible. That's 100% possible.
You moved to L.A. in what, 1988?
88.
Okay, 88. Did you come down to be an actor or to be a comedian?
I was already doing comedy. I came down to do both. But actually, over the years, I've decided that I love comedy more than anything. So now this is my eighth special. We just finished editing it yesterday. Comedy's like breathing to me, man. I just love doing it. Plus, no douchebag network executive lawyer who thinks he's creative can come in and go, we're canceling you.
Right.
Or some guy who's never written a joke or written a script can't walk in and go, hey, we don't think that's funny. Really? Can I see some of your material? I see one of your comedy specials, douchebag. And we've had, and in Titus, we had a bunch of the incidents like that where people would come in who had no idea about comedy, and they would just go, "Here's what we want you to do." We had an incident on Titus once because we did crazy stuff. We did an episode where we got my dad to start drinking again called The Intervention. We had an intervention, and so one guy came in and we were doing this article. We killed Stacy Keach at a casino based on a story that happened to my dad. And I basically had a heart attack while he was gambling, and he dies in the show, and then we bring him back to life.
Okay,
and it was kind. And then he goes towards the pearly gates. We do this flashback, and he gets to heaven, and they shut all the lights off, and they're like, shh, and like they don't want to let him in. So it's all this religious imagery and stuff. And so we're waiting to get our butts handed to us from the network executives. And this guy goes, you guys in the Bahamas, right? And the guy goes, so if Cynthia watches, she can be wearing a bikini? And I go, what? Jeez. I go, what? And he goes, yeah, do me a favor. I need to see the bikini because we need to know that it's small enough that we can get past standards, but also big enough so we can do. I was like, wow. There's the creative level of television.
Wow.
Yeah. So at that point, I was like, I hate everybody here. And hence the next year when the new network president said, we want to change the show, I was like, F is your problem. So, and now I so that comedy you can't take it away from me. At the end of the day, a stand up I can have an hour of material, walk into any bar with 14 people, and still get some potato skins.
You
draw
14 people?
yeah. That's on a good night, my friend. On a good night.
And it's still a rush for you. It's still super satisfying when you climb off the stage that you've done your bit.
Yeah, especially when it's a new site. I always try to do new stuff. Like, I want to do, like, this new show, Marageddon. Is, like, I started out writing an anti-Trump show, and I the way I, where I was performing, I needed Kevlar's expensive. I just found out Kevlar's really expensive. The first night I broke it in, I had written like 40 pages, and I've been doing this for 30 years. I don't check anywhere. I ask my agent, where am I going? He goes, Alabama. I was like, no,
that's a great place
to
debut to act, right?
No, I am not going to Alabama. But I went there, and it was weird, and I was reading it off the paper, which I think that's what saved me, because they couldn't believe I could do that. They were like, he looks at the paper and then says what it says. He's like a warlock. So
I'm sure they loved you down there, Christopher.
What's not to love?
And so then what happened is the first joke. So show started being an anti-Trump show, and I got people standing up, make America. They're like, it was the weirdest heckling. So I figured out I was just preaching to the choir. So this new show that I wrote was the first joke I wrote that saved the show. I said you people. I go you people that voted for Trump. I go you guys, by the way, you're my fellow Americans. I love you, but you have to admit when that man walks towards a microphone, you have anxiety, don't you? And it gets a laugh, and there's two guys sitting right off to the left of me, and they both dropped their heads and went, yes. And I realized that was the key, to let them know that, hey, we understand that you guys blew it. You know you blew it. Because that's the problem with the country right now. Liberals are like, there's this weird high ground that they have. You guys are idiots. Now, some of these people are millionaires. They didn't want this guy to be this guy. Here's how I know we're all the same in America. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Everybody, no matter who you voted for, have had this happen. Someone walked up to you and said, did you hear what he said today? And you went, now what? And then.
No matter who the president is.
Right, yeah. Right. And then they told you, and you went, no way. And then you turned on the TV, that and went, God damn it. So we're all the same. So that's what the show's about, man.
But you're still, like, I'm looking at where you're going this week. You're going to South Dakota. You're going to Kansas. You're going to Nebraska. You're still playing mostly Trump positive cities, right?
But that's where the show needs to happen.
And I
get on stage and I'll be like, if you laughed at one Obama fried chicken joke, you're gonna laugh at some Trump jokes tonight. And I go after everybody, because look, the four candidates we had this last time, I could have picked four better candidates by throwing a tennis ball into a severe trauma brain injury ward.
It wasn't a great group.
It was
a
Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, every man knows a dude like Ted Cruz, a guy who just roams the earth with this sentence playing in his head all the time. No one's ever going to wipe a booger on me again. No one's ever going to wipe a booger on me again. And if they do, I'm going to tattle. Then you had Hillary, who's got this wake of bodies behind her, allegedly. I'm saying allegedly.
Allegedly, sure.
Allegedly, because I don't want to, I don't want to.
You don't want to be next.
You don't want to die.
Yeah, I don't want to be. I don't want to die in a suspicious one-car accident. find me in an empty parking lot with trunk carpet fibers all over my body and a suicide note written in a language I don't speak. Allegedly.
Are you done with celebrity candidates? And the reason I ask that is because there's all sorts of people like Oscar De La Hoya and The Rock and people like that who are saying, Kanye, who are saying, yeah, I'm seriously thinking about running down the road.
He opened the door for anybody with an ego. Yeah. He just, by the way, you, The Rock, you were a professional wrestler.
Right.
And you work out good. and you made Vin Diesel look broody. But what else? I mean, you're a nice guy, but why do you get to be... We need some professionals.
Ballers, that's what else, Christopher. Ballers.
I will say that ballers. I should run. Actually, in the show, I do a campaign speech for about 5 minutes.
If you were president.
If I was president, okay, transgenders. I want transgenders in the military. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
You had the balls to cut off your own balls? That's pretty ballsy. I mean, that's my definition of courage, actually.
I can already see that on a bumper sticker.
That's a directed individual right there. Titus, who's the bravest man in your platoon? Linda. And I will follow her anywhere.
We have to take a very quick break. Christopher Titus is here. By the way, the reason he is here is because he is in town tomorrow night. This is a great event that Brad Williams has curated that we've been doing for the past few months. Why? Is he not?
He's curated it, Brad.
He has, yes.
Brad with a bowler hat on going, yes, come see the comedy. We've actually...
And there's nothing funnier than a midget in a bowler hat.
You are not kidding me, man.
That is the Hollywood Park Casino. It is going to be tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Christopher's on the bill along with Sarah Tiana, Carmen Rallis, Brad Williams, of course. You can buy your tickets at playhpc.com. just $30, and that includes your first drink, by the way, which is a great deal. Play HBC.com. More with our guests right after this on K-Rock.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show.
K-Rock. Allie, why do you always ask people if they know people that you know?
I always do. And Australians. I'm like, do you know Mark Chopper Reed, right? It's stupid.
Right, but there are millions and millions and millions
of people
in Australia.
Did I really mean, would you know Eric Nyman?
Can I answer that question?
Yeah.
I think maybe.
A little bit. A little part of it. Yeah.
Unfortunately, poor Christopher Titus had to deal with Allie during the song, man.
It was all right.
But he is in studio with us, making an appearance at the K-Rock No Limit Comedy Night at the Hollywood Park Casino. That's tomorrow night. If you want to buy your tickets, and you should, play HPC.com. It's a great lineup, including our friend Sarah Tiana, by the way, also Carmen Morales and Brad Williams. So, Chris, you were talking about how you love having the control of your career in your own hands because you go out and nobody can tell you what's funny. Right. Yeah, you are still doing a bunch of TV. You still show up on as guest on shows and stuff like that. And you did your own movie last year called Special Unit.
But I did that because so no one could tell me what to do. I wrote it and started Special Unit. And Brad, we're actually, if we can make enough money on it, I'm going to have Brad Williams do a sequel. The Special Unit, here's the premise. Due to the Fairness and Disabilities Act, the LAPD has to hire 4 handicapped undercover detectives. And I play Nick Nolte's mugshot. I play the worst cop. He's an alcoholic. He's taking protection money. They're trying to get rid of him, but they can't because he's been there too long. So they give him these 4. And we use real disabled actors. And it started. The reason I wanted to do it on my own this time is because we, in 06, we did a version of it for Comedy Central, and they kept saying yes and no and yes and no. It went on for 8 months. Wow. And then I found out one of the heads of Comedy Central had a kid who had autism, and they didn't like how far we went with the movie.
Well, you went, the reason I bring it up is, how are you still in show business after doing this movie? Why are you not being boycotted everywhere around the country?
Because you can't deny the premise of it. You see, the reason I did it is because I have a lot of friends that are actually disabled, and disabled people get treated 3 different ways. They get made fun of behind their back, they get made fun of to their face, or they get ignored, which is the worst. So my character does is my character is every a-hole I've ever seen treat him like that, and he calls them names, he's calling them retard, and he's doing all this stuff.
Calling them wobblies.
Wobblies, and saying, you know, if they do you really crap the bed? Well, everything. And he's just the worst guy, and they earn it, man. And they give back just as good as they get. And that's my buddy Mike. This started because there was a story. Mike and I were hanging out at a diner one day. Mike's got cerebral palsy. Mike's in the movie. He plays Morgan, and he's knurled up pretty bad, but he has 3 jobs. He works for ICE. He works. He has a public speaking job, and he's a stand-up comic.
Wow.
Smart as hell, yeah. And so we're at this restaurant one time, and this waitress comes over, asks me what I want, asks our 2 buddies what they want, and turns to Mike, looks back at me, and goes, what will he have?
Oh,
now,
wow.
But Mike is a comedian and has had this happen. So Mike, I see the look on Mike's face. I just see Satan flash across Mike's face, and I'm like,
you go,
oh.
This is going to be good.
I'm like, oh, no, what's coming? And he goes, I would like some boobies, thank you. Yours will be fine, thank you. And he cranks the level of retard up 3,000%. And this woman, this poor woman, every time she came back to the table, he would knock a glass of water. Oh, that was a tsunami, I'm sorry. And he knocked forks on the floor and just did horrible things.
On purpose.
And just to destroy her. And as a comic, I can't give him up. I can't be like, dude, stop. I just kept sitting there going, oh, I'm so sorry. This happens all the time. Oh, my God. He's done this to this poor woman for an hour. At the end of it, as we're leaving, she walks over with a check, and she's just shaking. And she just goes, I'm so sorry. And Mike goes, don't worry. You're my favorite waitress. I'll see you tomorrow. And we walk outside, and I hit the ground. I held it together. We got outside, and we get the parking lot. And I'm just like, dude, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. And Mike's not laughing. Mike, dead serious, goes, that bitch deserved it. And I was like,
really?
Oh.
So he was upset. How he was showing
it. He was just hate, vengeful, screwing her. And I really got how bad he – and he deals with that 24/7. And so I wrote Special Unit to kind of let them have – where they're, and no one helps them. No one saves them. They have to save – in fact, I get captured in the movie, and there's some really – it's laugh out loud funny. Well, you ask Williams about it. Brad Williams, who I was waiting – I asked Brad. We ran it through the Laugh Factory. I said, Brad, what do you think? And he goes, dude, I was on the plane, and I have headphones on, and I'm bursting out laughing on the plane. And he goes – and then here's what comics always say, and I don't laugh, dude.
Right. So,
which is a sad –
they do always say that. Yeah.
I say the same. Their comics go like this. That's funny.
Right.
When a comic says that, dude, rock. That's good.
Tell your face.
What?
Tell your face.
Yeah, tell your face. Yeah. Let me know. So anyway, the movie's out. It's on. And we've got all 5-star reviews on iTunes and Google Play and
Amazon everywhere. Yeah,
Amazon. We spent all the money on it, and then we didn't have anything to promote it.
All right.
So I hoard radio like I'm doing today. Thanks, guys.
Who was your director?
Me.
But it says Brian Cranston.
No, that was the original. That was the pilot.
The original.
Cranston was a buddy of mine. Cranston directed the pilot in 06.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That is insane.
Wow.
And here's the thing. And I was such a... Comedy Central was so far up our butt when we were filming the pilot about money. We had to... They'd go, guys, at midnight, we're done. We're done. And we're like, we have two scenes to shoot, and it's 11:40.
Right.
And I'm like... And I go to... And instead of getting mad at them, I go to Brian. And by the way, this is Brian Cranston. Now,
right.
He just on Malcolm in the Middle. He wasn't, you know, Heisenberg Brian Cranston yet.
Right.
But he's still one of the
most... afraid of him yet.
No, exactly. And he's just one of the most talented people in the world. And I go, Brian, we got to pick this up. And, you know, come on, let's go. And Brian looks, he turns and he goes, how about you direct this scene? How about you just do this one? And I go, fine. And I'm being really, this is the douchebag part of Titus. And I move him aside. I'm like, all right, got it. And everyone goes, okay. And Brian leans in and he goes, ask if everybody's ready. and I'm like, and I realize I don't know what I'm doing.
Oh, right.
And then he waits a second, and it gets way too long. And the whole crew is now staring at me. And he leans in and he goes, "Sound speed." It was horrible. It was horrible.
He's
and
the
I was
best.
Like, and I just said, "How about you handle this?" He said, "Thanks."
Yeah, maybe better. Yeah. Maybe better after
but that's
all.
Who Cranston is. Cranston's always that guy. I don't think I've ever seen. I never saw him all the time. We used to do Malcolm. We used to go on these press junkets. Brian is he's a mensch. He's the nicest guy. The only person I've ever met nicer than Cranston is Henry Winkler. Henry Winkler is. Henry Winkler will always stop and give you a parable or something. Like, I met him at a Springsteen concert when we were backstage, and I got to meet Springsteen and Winkler. I was in that show Big Shots, and Winkler comes over and he goes, "Hey, my wife loves that show Big Shots." We saw that, and I'm like, and I start to panic because it's Henry Winkler,
right?
And I met him once before, but I start to panic, and I said, "I'm not writing on this one, and it makes me crazy because I'm used to writing on it." And he goes, and he starts going to this. He goes, "Well, let me tell you what Ron Howard told me once." He just launches, and he knows everybody, and he launches into this amazing story that taught me something about show business that I never knew and that I've taken with me every day. And
he's
just,
one of those rare people who no one has a bad story about.
No.
It feels like nobody can say anything bad to Henry Winkler.
That would be the weirdest thing is like Henry Winkler dies and they found 14 bodies under his house. You'd be like, ah, there you go.
No one's that cool.
Yeah, see? We knew it somewhere deep down.
Well, we were all so happy. I'm sure you were too, Christopher, to see him win that Emmy last night.
Oh, he deserves it, man. That
he
dude,
deserves it.
And you think his career has been, he's the perfect example of why be a nice guy and why my career isn't going that well.
Exactly. All right. Well, you can see Christopher Titus on the road. In fact, not only does he have tomorrow night, as we have been telling you about at the Hollywood Park Casino, get your tickets now, but you're going to be coming back to town at the Ontario Improv end of November as well with your Amerigeddon special.
No, breaking the new one. The new one's called Stories I Shouldn't Tell. My family has already filed a cease and desist.
Okay,
but that's
good.
Not the point.
It's unbelievable. You do like a new 90 minutes like every year and a half. I mean,
yeah,
you're one of the
minutes.
Most prolific guys out there. It's crazy.
Isn't that my job, though? And I think that's why I think I'm getting better, because I think guys that do the same, and by the way, there's a lot of guys that do that. There's like maybe seven guys that really bust their ass writing.
Right.
And then there's a bunch of guys that have done the same act for 10 years. And here's when you know it's bad. When you're in the club and the guy's on stage and you see the waitresses walking around mouthing the guy's bits.
Oh, yeah.
You see that?
Oh, yeah. There's some guys. So I always want to do new stuff. Plus, Carlin did 14 specials and 21 albums. And so he set the bar, and I'll never be Carlin, but at least I can put out the quantity, not the quality.
Exactly.
But you can put in the effort.
Exactly.
Well, this was a lot of fun. I'm glad you came by.
Thanks,
and
guys.
Let's do it again in another 25 years or
that,
so.
I appreciate that. Perfect. I'm marking it now. It's in my iWatch.
Kevin and Bean on K-Rock. KROQ.
Hey, Allie.
Hey, Bean.
What's happening?
Well, we found out that season 44 of SNL debuts on the 29th, host Adam Driver, musical guest Kanye West. But now Vulture is reporting that Mikey Day, Melissa Villaseñor, and Alex Moffat have been promoted from featured to a repertory player. So moved up in the big leagues, right?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's how it works.
Cool.
Mikey Day is on a lot of sketches. I definitely think he's earned it.
Yeah, he's great. He's from the Groundlings out here.
Oh, no
Very
kidding.
Talented young man, that Mikey Day. Well, you guys remember that cave rescue in Thailand over the summer. 12 boys, ages 11 to 16, and their coach of the soccer team. Why the ding?
I was just go on.
Wow.
Right? Just comedy, Thailand.
Wow.
And
it
was all in Thailand, so it's legal. They were rescued from 1,000 meters below the ground over 3 days. Well, that is now becoming a movie. Michael De Luca and Dana Brunetti have inked a deal with Universal Pictures to make that film. So, that's good.
I'm really interested in that story because we have heard, maybe it's been significant news in the Thai press, it hasn't made it to America. We have heard nothing about the 9 days that they spent waiting to be rescued with nothing to do, nothing to eat, and nothing to drink.
Yeah, the only thing we really heard was that their coach kind of taught them different, like almost like a, what's the word?
Meditation.
Like meditation, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say transcendental, but yeah, they were meditating in there. So
yeah, he kept them calm, which is to his credit, certainly. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm stunned in nine, look. A day in, 2 days in, okay, maybe you're still holding out hope. Now you feel like at 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 8 days, somebody just has to go for it. I can't believe somebody didn't say, we got it. We're all going to die here unless one of us gets out and lets the world know we're here. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and I'm sure there had to be a lot of conversations about which fat kid they were going to eat first. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we don't know about.
They're all eyeing each other.
Yeah, Bean for sure wants to hear about whose arm they were going to eat first.
He really does.
It's what he needs.
But, I mean, aren't you guys fascinated with how they spent their time during 9 full days?
No, because it seems dull. They don't have anything to do. I'm out at that point.
Yeah, but that's when people start coming up with, you know, hatching plans and whatnot. You don't just sit there. You don't just lay on the ground and wait to die. You figure, you go, how can we get out of this? And I just can't believe they didn't, like, pick a short straw and force someone to try to swim out.
Maybe they did.
Well, we're going to find out when this movie comes out.
Right? Maybe it's going to take a whole other turn, and we're like, oh, one kid was dead. And none of us knew. Thanks a lot, B.
They ate every piece of them. That's why there was no sign.
Good God.
I don't know. I just think it's one of the most amazing rescue stories of all time.
It is. And just to piggyback on that, Elon Musk is being sued for defamation by the British rescue diver he accused of being a pedophile. Musk called Vernon Unsworth, a diver who had criticized Musk's attempt to help that Thai soccer team trapped in the cave. He wound up saying that it was just a PR stunt out there, that Musk was trying to get his own submarine out there. So, you know, Elon Musk did what any normal guy would do and just decided to call the guy a pedo.
I'm sorry?
What the hell? No sense was made throughout this whole thing. On Twitter, he's like, I mean, the guy's this age living in Thailand. Obviously, he's there for the kids.
Are you a pedophile?
So he was just basing on what age he is and where he lived.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, he was, wasn't he like 25 or something like that? And he was a soccer coach.
Right.
There's no takeaway from that.
No. This is the diver. This is the diver.
Oh, it wasn't the coach. Okay.
No, this is the diver that was helping get these kids out.
Ah,
but because the diver said that this is just a PR stunt from Elon Musk trying to get his name out there with his submarine, his ego got bruised, so then he started calling him a pedo. After apologizing, saying that it was spoken in anger, the Tesla chief later called Unsworth a child rapist in an email to BuzzFeed News. This is after he thought he squelched it, put it to bed because he apologized. Mm. Yeah, if you get a chance, look at this email. He's lost it. It is
insane. Borders on pedophilia.
It's very odd. The whole thing is very odd.
And it's strange that he thought that he crushed the whole story and then wrote an email
Email and then tweeted, like, oh, if the guy isn't a pedo, why hasn't he sued me yet? Well, suck it, Elon Musk. You are now being sued. But the thing that I don't get is he is suing him, saying he destroyed his reputation, heinous accusations of criminality against him to the public. He's seeking at least $75,000 in damages and an injunction for Musk to refrain from making further publication of the false and defamatory accusations. $75,000.
Does he not know how much money Elon Musk has?
I'm hoping the emphasis is on the at least $75,000 because, wow, you're suing Elon Musk. I would think you'd ask for a ton.
And it seems like a slam dunk, right?
It sure does.
So why wouldn't you?
I don't know. Todd. I don't get any of it. I really don't. I also don't get this fight between Tom Arnold and Mark Burnett that went down on Sunday. Apparently, Mark Burnett choked him, and he wound up ripping Mark Burnett's pink shirt and his gold chain.
Okay.
And then it came out that, oh, maybe it was being videotaped for Tom Arnold's TV show that airs tonight on Vice.
Mm.
So very weird situation playing out, but members of the LAPD plan to reach out to Kevin Bacon, Billy Eichner, Patton Oswalt, Allison Hannigan, and Jeff Probst because they were all either tweeting about it or seen around in the area. Apparently, Jeff Probst is the one that broke up the fight.
How weird must all that have been?
All of it is very, very odd.
Huh.
You go to an Emmys party, you think you're just going to have a cocktail, maybe some sushi. Then you see Tom Arnold just brawling with Mark Burnett. It's all very weird.
And you realize, I'm lucky I get to see this.
I chose the right night to go out.
Based on absolutely no information.
Uh-huh.
Who was the aggressor between those two, Mark Burnett
Tom
or Tom
Arnold?
Arnold?
Well, they said that it was Mark Burnett walking up the stairs with Roma Downey Jr. and then Tom Arnold beelined it for him.
Has to be
get
him.
In their face.
It's
so,
his show that's debuting tonight. He was trying to get...
Yeah, he was trying to ambush him for information, but...
I'm just guessing, but I would guess 100%.
You still don't put your hands on someone.
Yeah, correct.
So, yeah... I'm going to the wrong parties.
Right?
That's all I'm saying.
It's interesting that Tom Arnold has called the police and asked them to investigate, but Mark Burnett, who it sounds like you guys think was the victim, has not.
No. I'm saying Tom Arnold is the victim because he put his hands on him. I'm saying Tom Arnold is the one that went after him, though, as the aggressor to try and get information. Mark Burnett is the one that went after him aggressively with his hand.
Mm, okay,
gotcha. See what I'm saying?
Gotcha. So you're saying that Tom Arnold was using words?
Yeah, he was instigating it.
And Mark Burnett started with the fisticuffs?
That's what all the stories are saying.
Oh.
Seems odd.
So that makes Mark Burnett the bad guy. Worst guy. I guess
did I not say he wore a gold chain?
You
I
did mean, say that.
Right,
picture.
Right
yeah,
there.
Right. You
come
did
on.
Say that.
Listen, this is all second, third hand, whatever. And God knows, sorry, Tom Arnold, I'm not watching your show tonight to find out if the video's there. But, I mean, more will come out for sure.
Sure.
Again, just going to the wrong parties.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Saying there's no fights at the parties I go to?
Yeah.
So I need to change that up.
Did you see this Bryan Singer news yesterday?
Yes.
Oof.
The joke lately, and I think they said it on the Emmys last night, is wait 9 months and anyone can come back.
Absolutely. So, Bryan Singer is apparently in negotiations to direct Millennium's Red Sonja. This, by the way, if you don't know who Bryan Singer is, he was the one fired by Fox after repeatedly not showing up for work on the set of the Queen biopic Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. Had some other work-related offenses on there. Then in December, he was sued by a man that accused him of raping him when he was 17 back in 2003. Not the first time he's faced those allegations.
Wow.
He's the subject of a documentary, one of the subjects of a documentary, An Open Secret, which links Singer with a whole bunch of Hollywood pedophiles. So looks like he's been out of,
wow,
you know, out of our sights for a few months. So he's ready to come back and make a grip of money directing this because there's no other directors. There's only
just
him.
Just him?
Wow. That's odd.
It's insane to me the chances that people get in this town. So
there's that.
So what's the job he's been hired for? It's a comic book movie,
he's in
right?
negotiations to direct Millennium's Red Sonja. So they're rebooting that movie. So we will soon see with that. And Amber Rose hasn't seen her engagement ring that she got from her ex, Wiz Khalifa, in about a month. She went looking for it, and she's like, wait a minute, it's gone. And the reason she's so concerned, not only that it's obviously a ring worth a little bit of money,
right,
but she wanted to give the ring to their son, Sebastian, one day. Also, it's worth $150,000.
Okay.
Yes. But she says a lot of people have been in and out of the house. She can't really pinpoint it, but then there was an interview with her yesterday where she kind of seemed like she might have a lead on who it might be,
oh,
but... That's, you don't steal people's jewelry, do ya?
I feel like that's probably a safe comment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, really going out on a limb. Right. Don't email me with that hot take. I'm just saying. So that's a little bit of what's happening for you. But first, some birthdays. Jada Pinkett Smith, James Marsden, Jason Sudeikis, Aisha Tyler, and Brazilian soccer player Ronaldo. And that's what's happening.
Thanks, Allie. You drive home today. Listen to a commercial-free 5 p.m. hour, a random act of helpfulness from the SoCal Helpful Honda dealers. Tomorrow morning, an all-new Kevin and Bean show. We have Judy Greer on the program talking about the kidding show on Showtime.
Listen how excited he is.
I know. He's too excited.
Well, yeah. I do love her.
Should we cancel?
No. Because she's too excited. She's a wonderful actress. Yeah.
And a delightful
lady.
Do we want you to scare her?
Plus, remember how exhausted he was today from Christopher Titus?
We'll have to reconsider that.
Yeah.
Plus, Joel McHale will be here tomorrow morning as well. And we've got your passes for Not Scary Farm Takeover as well tomorrow morning.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.